At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hi, Ghosties. It's me, Meg.
And me, Sarai.
And today we are super excited because we got to have a conversation with Liz Boltz. She's a spiritual writer, teacher, and a bunch of other cool things as a person. Liz Boltz Ranfield knows what it means to grow up in the spotlight of American Christian evangelism. Her dad is Ray Boltz, the Christian music icon, whose songs soundtracked purity pledges and altar calls all across the 90s. Along with her brother Phil, Liz recently appeared in Shiny Happy People, Season 2, a teenage holy war on Prime, where the Boltz siblings shared their experiences inside Teen Mania's high-pressure world of revival stadiums, mission trips, and boot camp-style faith. But Liz is not just a survivor of that culture. She's a writer, teacher, and healer who's reclaiming spiritual practices for herself and for others. Liz helps people reimagine spiritual writing not as a burden or as quiet time for the Lord, but as a living, breathing practice of healing, resistance, and self-discovery.
I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation as much as we did, at least. Maybe even more. Probably not. We really liked it.
It was a really good time.
Welcome, Liz.
Welcome, Liz. Thanks so much for having me. Liz, for people who maybe don't know you, don't know anything about you, what is something that you think everybody should know about Liz?
That is a killer question to start with. That's like a wrap-up question. Tell us the most interesting, deepest, or most fascinating thing about you.
Yes. Let's just cut straight in there.
I just thought it would be something fun, like, you know.
It is fun.
Some dogs.
Yeah. I left my career as an English professor because I wanted more freedom, flexibility, and I wanted to live a different life than what I was living. And So for the past 3 years, I've been doing whatever I want. I mean, I have to pay the bills, but
we love
whatever.
That.
I've just taken a completely different approach to my life. So that's how I ended up on Shiny Happy People. That's how I end up on TikTok. That's how I end up teaching spiritual writing classes and charcuterie workshops. And you know,
charcuterie workshops.
Charcuterie workshops. I do that too.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So that's the thing to know about me is that I think COVID broke my brain a little bit.
Yes.
And
for all of us.
Yeah. And so I just putting myself back together after that, I decided it needed to look different. So
I love that so much. We've talked about this a lot, that after COVID, we didn't really have a collective healing or a collective re-entering into the world, like kind of trickled back to this weird normalcy, but that's not normal. Like we all experience this global thing together. And one of the things that we're talking a lot about is like, what life do we want to have now? And for some people, that means after leaving religion. But it also is this like post-COVID world where we isolated in ways. It caused me to have cravings to have like in-person human connection again, because I missed it for so long. And I started to find myself going back to like those experiences from youth group and from church and really being like, how do we do this? Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to hear about what you're doing with people. It sounds like you're doing some like in-person things and helping people heal.
Yeah. So when I was in grad school, I started working on my MFA thesis, which was about my experience at Teen Mania Ministries and about one particular summer that I spent with them in one village for about 8 weeks. Well, 6 or 7 weeks. And I was trying to figure out, you know, I'm workshopping different chapters and my thesis advisor recommended that I do an independent study on the spiritual memoir. And so we came up with this reading list of some really interesting and some not so interesting books. I read things I loved and things I did not love and kind of got a really wide picture of what that genre looks like, spiritual memoir. And that really helped me write my thesis, but it also kind of set up this foundation because I was avoiding I thought I was avoiding writing and talking about religion. And I think so much had been pigeonholed into this is Christian writing, this is not. And so taking a course at the University of New Hampshire without this baggage of like, all these books need to be approved by a Christian college professor.
Yes.
I loved my Christian college professors, but still, it was...
Bless their hearts, yes.
Right. Oh, and I had some phenomenal ones too. I will say that. But I read so much more and realized, no, spiritual memoir doesn't have to fit into this little category, right, of Christian religious memoir.
Yeah.
And so in that experience, I took that with me when I became an English professor, and there began to be these little opportunities to teach spiritual writing. So I directed the Indiana Faith and Writing Conference for a few years. So I would do a spiritual writing workshop or activity. I started doing spiritual writing workshops for faculty development sessions, things like that. Eventually, I started teaching a course in spiritual writing and taught that at the collegiate level. And so when I left my career as an English professor, I didn't want to leave teaching. So I still adjunct here and there, but I also launched my online teaching, which is just independent. And I teach online and in-person spiritual writing workshops. And just by nature of, I think, who I am, a lot of the people that participate are progressive Christian, post-Christian, ex-evangelical, or have experienced some kind of big faith shift.
Mm.
And so that tends to be where the participants come from. It turns out I really thrive in that space. So, yeah.
That's so amazing. And you're giving people language around this and something outside of religion to then have a touch point to.
Yeah, I sometimes refer to it as a secular approach to spiritual writing, in the sense that there is not a prescribed religious theology or perspective in the class. And it makes room for people to come in from wherever they stand, they can benefit from it. So some people are going to be using their religious background or spiritual traditions or religious traditions to access that spiritual writing. And most people are not. And I do hope it gives people language and an opportunity to really listen to themselves and explore who they are and kind of that deep inner part of yourself, instead of trying to listen for God's voice, listening to your own voice, listening to who you are.
Yeah. I love that so much. I think it's such a crucial thing for us to be able to tap into the still small voice that we thought was coming from somewhere else, and finding out that it's actually coming from inside the house is pretty wild. But
right.
That's cool. How do you, I mean, people are coming to you willingly, obviously. So it's not like you are like trying to burst through a bunch of barriers, but I am curious if any of your writers experience like resistance or other kind of just, I guess, like challenges that stretch them as they're considering how to approach these topics. Like what do you sort of see out there by way of like the struggle?
Yeah, I try to give people a lot of permission to experience whatever they need to experience, while also emphasizing that I do not have a background in counseling, therapy, or anything like that. You know, I'm not even there to be like a spiritual formation person or anything like that, but to provide a space where they have permission to really figure out whatever they want to figure out. One thing that really helps, and that I think people have found to be freeing, is there's kind of two tracks for spiritual writing. There's writing the spiritual experience for a reader, right? Which is where you get spiritual memoir. I don't really dabble in that as much. I love those books, but that's not where my teaching is. My teaching is writing for the self and expression. So there is no audience. There is no reader. There's no external. There's only the internal.
Cool.
And so
yeah.
And so giving people that permission to not think about publishing, to not think about, oh, this is, who's going to judge it? No, this is strictly for you. Just like maybe actually more so than prayer, because prayer was to God, to the audience of God, but things that you were supposed to be doing privately and you were like shamed if you didn't do them well enough. Right.
Yes.
We want to step away from that and say, no, there is no one judging this. There is no one coming in and saying, you're not doing this well enough. I think I've started doing that in response to the resistance people sometimes feel.
Yes.
Right? To say, it's okay. You don't have to share this with anybody.
And we learned so deeply. I mean, I'll speak for myself, just that really, truly God was hearing every thought.
Yeah.
Every desire, every feeling, God knew it and was judging it instantly.
Mm-hmm. I really like, what are some ways that we can start to break that? What are ways that you help people to kind of say, you know, how do you redirect that thought to really exit God from the conversation and help us to just own that, you know, for ourselves, that privacy is okay, that mm-hmm. we can have our own, you know, private spaces and thoughts and feelings, and that no one is listening.
Yeah.
Privacy. Damn.
I mean, that's a great framework for it too, right? The idea that no one is listening. I mean, I don't think that I can say anything to convince somebody that God is or isn't listening.
Yeah.
But I would encourage someone to think, if they find themselves constantly thinking about God as listener or God as observer, and maybe they're in a place where they still believe in God. And so they're like, I don't want to just, they're not comfortable saying that's not, because one solution is to say, well, if you don't believe in God, you can just practice reminding yourself of that belief.
Right. Yeah.
But many of my participants do. And so to be able to say, okay, just like if you're writing a letter to a friend, that friend is the audience. If you are writing a prayer to God, God is that audience. You really need to think about yourself as the audience. So even if God is listening, then God is snooping. And so like,
not his business.
Right. So like, give yourself permission to say, nope, this is just the only audience here is me.
Yeah. That's
and
powerful.
That's probably what I would encourage someone to do if they came with that question to class.
It's such an amazing thing to help people have that kind of autonomy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it even strikes me when you first said the self is the audience for the writing, that like in the religion, in the high control religious environments that we were raised in, like one, you're supposed to die to the self in the first place.
Right.
So like having a self is bad, frankly. And that you would imagine like being able to devote time and energy and your talents and your resources to something that is just for you is also like just such a huge thing to realize or try for the first time. Cause I feel like everything I ever did my whole life until I was like, wait a minute, shit, was for something like that. Like
something,
even my journals
yeah.
read like, oh, they're just like so dramatic. It's and so like, I'm writing a psalm. It's like so painful.
You an old timey Bible journal writer.
You guys, you're good. No, I wrote all my diaries to my teddy bear.
So precious.
You're so good at playing with audience.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like an
and I started keeping a diary or journal around third or fourth grade the first time. And, you know, that's just a perfect age.
Oh,
and then
sweet.
It became, it's real. Like, even as I'm a teenager, I'm
Still?
Not like writing Dear Biscuit the Bear or whatever, but there is a you, and the you is that teddy bear.
I love Biscuit
so
the Bear.
Precious.
Here I'm over
Biscuit
here just, you know, being so dramatic. I was pretty like emo, I guess.
Well, I think it helped because I have a good friend, and we were, well, actually, Addie Zierman, who wrote When We Were on Fire,
mm-hmm.
which is a memoir that looks at that at T-Mania and evangelical zeal.
Yes.
And we were going through diaries. We were at a writing retreat recently, and we were going through diaries, and hers were all to God and all very flowery. And we were comparing the difference. And I do think that I, as a young person, had a little bit more permission to, I mean, I was still hiding things. I was still, but they weren't prayers and they weren't to God. And so they were, I was giving myself some authenticity that I didn't realize I was giving myself.
Yeah,
I love that.
That's
and
so
I love
cool.
that younger you like had that, you know,
it's yeah.
such a great thing when, especially when we get to go back and realize, I do this a lot of like going back and realizing like, when was I actually in my full power and in my autonomy? Mm-hmm. And when was I operating where I just felt my truest mm-hmm. and it wasn't for somebody else? And there are these moments where we, you know, I had those. It's so valuable to like own that and go back and realize like, even in the midst of all of this control, I did still have these like me moments, and that I can hold those and kind of like collect them together and be like, see, all these parts of you like have always been, and they weren't for anyone else, and they weren't
yeah.
because someone gave them to you or you earned them somehow. It's like, we all just get to be who we are. That's like what's so fun about being in these different bodies and living in these different lives, you know?
Yeah.
Let's have fun with it. So what I want to know, what's something good in your life? What's something that's fun that you're enjoying right now that you feel like, even if it's just for you, but I'd love it if other people get inspired by it.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I wanted to say is I have 3 tiny foster puppies.
And if people have not seen them, please go find Liz.
Liz, oh my gosh,
on TikTok, because these puppies will just bring a delight, you know?
I can see them right now. They're in a pile of sleeping puppy.
Cute.
And it's so cute. And they're total like 6 pounds of puppy, I think, total. Anyway, I do that when anytime that things are going a little wild in my life, I tend to foster a puppy.
Grounding, honestly.
It is. And I mean, I have dogs and chickens and other animals, but like there is something very much like, oh, this thing needs me for a period of time. And I got puppies right after the election and had them through Christmas. And anyway, so, but what's something that's not puppies? You know, we were talking about coming out of COVID and I said how I changed careers and things. I have finally found myself as an adult in a situation where I have close local friends.
Yeah. How did you make friends as an adult?
Oh my gosh.
Tell us all your secrets.
Well, it took a long time, so I don't know if I'm the right person here. I've always been somewhere a lot of my, you know, I think in an internet era, mm-hmm. a lot of us, our best friends are far away, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's just happened. And that happens, I think, when, you know, graduate from college and who do you stay in close contact with? And if you're not lucky enough to live in the same place. So I haven't felt like devoid of connections, but I mean, I just feel like, and it's 2 people, just to clarify.
That's a lot.
It's just 2 people. But 2 people is a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think after COVID, and these people I knew before COVID, but like after COVID, after such a long time of being removed from people and being distant in a lot of ways, to start saying yes to some things that I would normally have said no to.
Yeah.
I don't really want to go to the mom's night, whatever, from whatever Facebook group. I don't really want to go to this, you know, do I really want to go to a brunch thing? Like, but actually saying yes to some of those things as an introvert, I want to say no to, but as a person who needs connections, I wanted to say yes to, and then being willing to like ask people to join me for some things. And so, I mean, it goes back to like the advice that they give you, like, go do things.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Things.
Exactly. Doing things is a great start.
Right. Doing things is really helpful, but then also just, and so I don't know that I have great lessons on how to make friends, but I also think just finding other people who were equally affected by something like COVID and people that took it seriously. I mean, that were affected by it seriously and affected by other things that affect, you know, like it kind of grew into a thing. So now, I mean, I can't believe it. I have friends in my local area. So what's making me happy, what's a good thing in my life, is just feeling connected with people for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
It's so valuable. I feel like this is maybe, I'm hoping we can help start the trend of saying yes to things, because I'm in a similar state as an introvert, and also just, it was a scary time. It was a really challenging time. And I had a kid who was basically growing up having puberty during that experience. And
same.
Going through that and watching the world that he was experiencing was also a lot. And as a parent, realizing like, I'm not sure how to make friends. How am I going to help you re-enter and go back into the world and, you know, just like exist without all these fears? And just the idea of me inviting people somewhere, mm-hmm. finding a thing to do. We had a comedy club open up in our town. That's been so amazing for us because it's a place to go and you know you're going to laugh. And we're getting great comics coming through. And we got to see Kevin James Thornton and Rachel Scanlon just like in our little, you know, town. And it got us to invite people somewhere and it just was a night of fun. And it's like, if those can be the goals, a night of fun and enjoying it with people. And I bet we could all find more things that we could say yes to or invite people to. So maybe that's a challenge for all of us.
Yeah. And another thing I would say is believe people when they say that they want you to be there.
Yeah. Yes. When they invite you, believe
when that. When they invite you or they, like, believe that, that you're not like, believe that you're being included because they want you there.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh, well, you know, they just cast the wide net or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's good. That's actually a really good tip, frankly. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, like for people like us who are raised to have very hard self-judging thoughts all the time, it is hard to believe that people genuinely just like care about you and like want to know you because you're a person, you know, and it's
right.
Like not because they are trying to convert you or get you to come to their group or whatever it is. It's like
because you missed church 3 or 4 times and yes. They're like, you better ask somebody to go. You got to find out what's going on. Keep them coming.
Yes, right.
How's your walk?
Yeah. Making friends and being a person outside of a cult is like weird. You know, I mean, because that is true. Like, that's what it's
you're
like.
What am I selling you now? Is it me?
Right.
And that's what the self-judgment comes back into is like, I always had this thing. I would be like, why would I introduce myself to somebody? Why would they want to know me?
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize, well, because you're a person, you're interesting. Like, you're also maybe here for a reason. So like,
yeah.
Introduce yourself. That's okay.
And even
that was a good one for me to learn.
It is a good one. And it's, I think, also shifting into like, not only, oh, why would they want to know me? But also like, I wonder what I want to, if I want to know this person. Like it's playing smash or pass with friends. You know what I mean? And then you can start a conversation with somebody that you're like, oh, you know, maybe
that's
where
the
do
way
we
start playing smash or pass.
Yeah, you have a
I need to do
start.
Friendship smash or pass.
Friendship smash or pass.
I can do the other one.
Go to a thing and see.
Sold. Okay. I'm going out there and smash or passing friends.
Yeah. Cause you're going to decide too. Like it's not just a one way street where like you're hoping someone might pick you or not, like assuming no one will, but you also get to have that agency. Like again, like the agency of being alive and doing anything was so thoroughly drilled out of us that it is, I think, a epic climb to like learn how to reclaim those things. And even the like thought patterns that we have, like every little self-judgment that we have, just like learning to observe and let those things pass through without attaching to them or making them meaningful or giving them power. Because the only way those things have power is if we continue to give away our agency and our power to those things and allow them to dictate our lives. And otherwise we're like, we actually just get to make choices. And that's kind of what freedom is.
Yeah. I didn't know we'd be talking making friends, but making connections, but I like where it went.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a thing I crave. I realized it's a craving. It's something that I miss, you know, I'm going to lust for friendship.
So beautiful. Good.
It's so a beautiful. Place to start.
It's where I'm at. This is my level. Little baby steps, just figuring myself out. And that's my pace though. You know, it's like I go a little at a slower pace and I think that's okay. We all get to have our own way, you know, about us. So if you're like me and you don't know how to do any of this, we can be besties. And if you're more like Sarai, congratulations.
I don't know. I'm not that great. Thank you. I mean, no, just kidding. But yeah, I mean, I think it is so much about re-empowering, reclaiming, like being like, oh, why am I keeping myself from this thing? I'm limiting whatever.
Experience. I'm limiting what I get to experience in the world. And I'm doing it because I used to think that it was good and safe and the righteous thing to do to withhold parts of myself and to be, what's the word when people are like, oh, you're just perfect and bland enough that like you're not intrusive in any way. And so
disappearing.
That one works, you know, to just like make myself palatable to everyone. And that's just such, I mean, that's like that hypervigilance comes into play and it's so taxing and it's all encompassing. And there is no room left to consider or think about myself in that kind of situation, you know? So it's like, there's just so many things for us to unlearn. And also I like to find the joy in the unlearning of those things and the ways that I can play with them. Like, you know, I joke about smash or pass, but like, it's true. Like, I never played that. It just wasn't appropriate. And so it's like unlearning that, and that it's not harming anyone else. And it's not, you know, it's not degrading to somebody because I'm not like being lewd or crude or anything. Like, it's just, it is just for me. And there is no one listening to my thoughts, and I get to make the audience me, you know, like you're saying, it's just another way that we get to heal and get to do things for ourselves.
That's good. I like that.
I want to thank you so much for giving us this kind of mind opening. And I know that for listeners and people that we hear from on the internet, like, we need more of you. We need more people who are willing to just show up, one, to be an example of what life can look like in a different way, and also to help to be a guide and to help show us, just open our minds to these different things. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
Liz, if people want to engage with you more and learn more about spiritual writing, how can they do that?
Yeah. So I do currently have a self-guided spiritual writing. It's not really a class, but it's more like a series, a collection of writing activities, spiritual writing activities from that secular perspective we've been talking about. It is specifically for coping with the current administration. And so it's spiritual writing for rest, reclamation, and resistance. And so I've set it up so that, it's kind of like a pay what you can sort of thing. So I've got it set at $5 to $20. And if somebody cannot pay the $5, they reach out to me. I will get it to you.
Nice. Thank
but
you.
It's on my website. And I wrote it as a series of activities that I thought have come from my classes that can be done in a self-paced way. I think there's about 15 of them, but that I thought would be particularly helpful right now for what people are needing. Under what we're under.
Yeah. It's so needed. And your generosity is really, I mean, so valuable. I thank you so much for doing that,
yeah.
for offering that
You're
to
welcome.
People.
And roll.
I'm so excited. I honestly, truly love finding more avenues and resources for people. It's all I want. I just want more people to have more exposure to healing. It's like,
yeah.
It's,
well, I think that a lot of us, because of the kind of traumatic experiences we have with like quiet times and devotions and prayer, moving beyond that has meant cutting off what I think can be a very healthy thing, which is reflection and meditation and things like that. I think those can be healthy, but like, I know I was always so bad at quiet times.
Yeah.
And I always just felt so guilty. I felt
Hiding
so guilty.
Your mind.
Yes. And then Ron Luce's whole thing, the Team Mania's whole thing was, it has to be in the morning and it has to be every day. And, you know, it's just such a sign of like failure if you can't do it. So then I just always felt guilty, and then I didn't develop any good habits in that area because it was just so much shame. And so one of the things that I've found with the spiritual writing activities is it's like an opportunity for someone who may not be, you know, they may not be able to sit there and meditate. They may not be able to, they may not be, you know, certain things may not be their path, but, you know, give them a chance to write and explore a connection with a bigger world.
Yeah.
And mystery. And so that's,
I think writing is kind of magic. Like, there's something interesting to me when I start writing that, like, it's almost surprising the things that I say to me. Like, it's like a almost unconscious part of myself can come out through like typing, and then
Find
out stuff about who I really am, I guess, because it's like, interesting.
Yeah, having language.
A different voice when I type versus when I write by hand.
Yeah.
And I think I go to a different medium depending on kind of like what the thing is that I want to kind of get out.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm not surprised. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I like it.
More revelations. I'm just like, more people need to hear more revelations. It's like, that's all I think about is like, when I have this realization of like, oh shit, this thing connects to this thing. And if I can either untangle it or weave it in a different way, that it releases something, it ignites something, it creates this whole other part of me that's just like, oh, hi, there you are. Here you are again. You know?
It's just,
I love the magic of all of that.
I mean, there are linguistic theories about like the fact that the words give us meaning, like that when we can express it in words,
yeah,
it actually makes the meaning.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Have you heard about the, have you ever heard about the activity that people will do? It's, I heard about it on actually a, there was, it was something on NPR. I forget which show it was on. And this was years ago, but it was a psychologist who would, or who would have people write the scary experience that they had or the traumatic experience three times, days apart. But then as they wrote it, by the end, they can change it and they can change what happened. And so like you start by writing everything you remember about a traumatic experience. And then the next day you write it again, but like you've just written about it. So you start noticing different things. And then by the third time you write about it, you change whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So you, I mean, this is the way that I've used it in class, adapted from that story. So like you, if you were scared of something, no, you weren't. If someone was cruel to you, you had the perfect comeback. If you were injured, you escaped it. And so you just read it. It is surprisingly freeing experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
That's what I did for snakes.
It's rewiring your neural connections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Changing, you know, recovering from traumatic events, like, can absolutely be done that way. Like, that's a plasticity thing. It's so cool. I mean, it is true. Like, writing is magical. Like, it, thinking about, like, words giving meaning, it's spellcasting. Like, that's what... You know what I mean? Like, it is at a metaphysical level that, but it's also in reality, like, actually our brains do respond to these things, and it does change your experiences in the present day. It's like it feels like healing because it is, you know, recreating a new cloth where there was a hole. You know, it's like that's you're reweaving something that's powerful and like supportive of you and then allowing you to march on. Like that's beautiful. I'm really glad you brought that up. That's really cool.
And that's why we have to be especially careful with our AI communications because of what that could the experiences of that it could potentially rob us of.
Yeah.
So I use AI professionally. I have to use it professionally in, not in my writing, but in the marketing area. And I think any of us that have to use it professionally should try our hardest to have other places where we are engaging with the written word completely separate.
Yeah.
Even if we don't consider ourselves writers.
Yes.
I don't want us to lose that. I don't want us to lose what writing can give to us. And you don't have to be a writer. What you're describing is not for writers. You know, it's for everybody who writes. And so I think there are so many things with AI right now that are troubling. And I'm not a teetotaler who says like you absolutely can't ever use it, because sometimes first of all, even those of us that think we're not using it are still using it and interacting with it without realizing it. And sometimes in certain contexts it is necessary professionally or otherwise, but if we have to engage with it in those contexts, especially the need to make sure that we are still doing the brain and spirit work of writing.
Yep.
100%.
I think so too.
And also it gives us, I mean, being able to say things out loud and to hear a person respond, not someone that's like trained to respond in some like everything you say is perfect way, because that's also just like my biggest thing with AI is the like, oh my God, you're the best. You just did the most amazing everything all the time. But maybe it's also because I just didn't hear a lot of that as a child.
I think it can give us something.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it does. I mean, I talk about this with other friends who have to use it consistently in different settings. And it is the way that it talks to you is you're so smart. You've got it figured out. Oh my gosh, this is going to be so good.
Oh my God.
I love
so
it.
So good.
Thank you for joining us today, Liz. What a great conversation we just had.
And if you want to catch up with Liz, you can find her on TikTok at LizBR. That's right. It's LizBR on TikTok. And we're going to have Liz come to camp. I don't know when and where and how we're going to sort it out, but Liz is on board. Let's do workshops. Let's have bonfires. Let's sleep in cabins and stay up too late giggling. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Done it a lot of times. I want to do it again.
So if you are interested and want more information about camp, please go to our website, holyghosting.com. There's a little button that says camp, and you can sign up for more information. We would love to have a camp in your area, so please let us know where you live and where you want to see camp show up. And if you miss us in between episodes, you can see us every day on TikTok. Sometimes we're on Instagram too, so check us out over there. We are Holy Ghosting. And if you want to share some of your thoughts and prayers, you can email us at holyghosting@aol.com. That's right. We're at holyghosting@aol. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week, ghosties. Bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.